This is the Invest It Best podcast, a show about investing and financial markets where you'll hear from some of Australia's top investment analysts and fund managers about their views on the market. The Invest It Best podcast is brought to you by Wilsons Advisory, one of Australia's leading financial advisory firms with a proud and successful history spanning over 125 years. All information discussed in this podcast is for general information purposes only and does not constitute investment advice. You should seek investment advice tailored to your circumstances before making any investment decision. This is the Invest It Best podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Invest It Best podcast. My name is Ted Richards, and this episode I'm speaking with Rob Crookston, senior analyst within our investment strategy team here at Wilsons Advisory. Listeners would be familiar with Rob as he's been a regular guest on the show over the years now. Welcome back to the Invest It Best podcast, Rob.
Thanks, Ted. Always good to be here.
Rob, let's jump straight into it. Now, at the time of recording, it is 8th of March, and we're wrapping up reporting season. Now, Rob, first question. Is it fair to say that this reporting season that's just been has been better than feared?
Yeah, I think so, Ted. I think this reporting season got a pass mark, and the reason I say that is we've seen more upgrades than downgrades from the ASX industrial stocks over the last month. This is partly due to low expectations going into reporting season from sell-side analysts, but also effective cost management in a tough macro environment as well. And that's really been the key for those upgrades that I just spoke about as well.
Yeah, it's as you were saying that, it reminded me of a book by Michael Mobison. I think it's Expectations Investing. And it's that are flying and going, you know, maybe like the mega caps, but often it is just where a change of expectations from a company that might be feared going poorly, not going as bad. Rob, let's dig in a bit deeper there. In a recent report that you put together actually this week on the reporting season wrap-up, and an episode to that will be in the episode show notes. Feel free to click on that if you missed that. You outlined how a lot of company upgrades that you touched on have been off the back of cost-cutting. So maybe for those that haven't read that, can you tell us a bit more about, you know, what that's looked like?
Yeah, cost management was a big theme in February. We saw a whole range of different companies from different sectors with cost management initiatives or productivity boosts as well, and sectors from building materials, financials, to retailers. So normally the more cyclical side of the market, but showing real agility in adjusting their cost base. So there's companies like Reliance Worldwide, which is designs and manufactures plumbing products and goes globally, distributes globally, or someone like Boral, which is building materials. They're very targeted spending cuts to improve their margins. You know, they've been implementing over the last 12 months. We had retailers like JB Hi-Fi that did a very good job at increasing productivity. And I think their mantra was really, you know, doing more with less. So this has helped, you know, these sort of companies outperform expectations, and we've seen the earnings upgrades flow from that. So even the top line was in line with expectations. It was really, you know, the margins that we saw, the improvement from that cost cutting, and that led to the upgrades at the bottom line.
And Rob, how did that flow through to share price for some of these companies like Boral, Reliance and JB Hi-Fi in terms of, you know, when they reported and they updated the market, what did it look like?
Well, yeah, they've all rallied.
Yep.
Their upgrades have been pretty strong. So you're talking sort of high single digits earnings upgrades to even double digits for something like Boral. And the share market is you know, latched onto that and rallied accordingly. So yeah, the market took it in its stride and has liked it.
Okay. Now, Rob, how much can companies keep cutting costs before revenue starts to get impacted? So, like, you know, can businesses play this card again next reporting season?
Yeah, good question. I think that's the question a lot of people are asking. I think they can't cut forever because at some point, as you sort of alluded to, cutting costs impacts your ability to invest and grow the top line. We probably won't see the same level of cost cutting or cost management in the next half, but I still think it's going to be pretty important for a lot of these more cyclical companies to manage and counter this tricky economic climate over the next sort of 6-12 months. So yeah, I think we've probably seen the best part of that cost management in the first half. I think consensus probably now is getting more in line with what the companies have been doing over the last 6 to 12 months. So I don't think we see as big an upgrade, but I still think it will be a bit of a theme going through the next reporting season in August.
So that's a cost-cutting theme that's played out over reporting season. Let's look at one industry that's frequently been in the media for a long period of time, and that's tech stocks, particularly the mega caps in the US that have had some great growth in the US, which we're all familiar with. But what about tech stocks back home domestically? How did they perform throughout reporting season?
I think if you think about global stocks, they've been rallying on the back of AI, which I do think is a tangible theme. It will structurally change the growth profile of these businesses. It's always pretty good in the first place. It's probably just got a bit better. So that's really been one of the keys for the global stocks, especially the US, you know, mega techs. But I think they've also performed well on the back of a more narrowed focus on profitability. And I think now we're seeing Aussie tech starting to follow that as well. You know, before, probably in the last decade, there was the sole focus was on top line growth, and that was the key to outperformance. I think now there's more of a focus on profitability, as well as obviously, you know, improving that top line as well. But you know, the key metric that the market and management teams are now striving for is this rule of 40. So that's basically a healthy tech company should have a combined top line growth rate and profit margin exceeding 40%.
The golden rule of 40, maybe if you can give us the history of this, who started it and why it's important.
I think we really saw it probably in 2022. A lot of these, you know, really just revenue companies got hit very hard from high bond yields. So that was probably the catalyst for this shift, or you know, or the market shift towards profitability.
Like kind of like the Afterpays or Squares. You know.
Yeah, something like that. Block, be one now. The one I think of is probably Salesforce. They were very top-line focused. There wasn't really a focus on cost at all. And really over the last 12 months, we've seen, this is the US tech stock, we've seen them shift to a focus on profitability. They've cut their costs, and they're probably a bit more of a sustainable business model now. Still growing revenue, you know, very strongly, but they've got, you know, very good profit margins at the same time now, and you can see that flow through obviously to the EPS and the earnings. So yeah, there's obviously a few, and they also did it in a flurry over the last 12 months, but as I said, now some of the Aussie guys are playing catch up as well and starting to do that.
Okay, so golden rule of 40.
So it's the top line revenue growth, and it's your profit margins as well.
And you want that to exceed 40.
Exceed 40. So I'll give you a very simple example. If you've got a tech company, it's growing its sales at 20% year on year, and it's got a 20% profit margin, that gets you to 40. So you want companies that can do that. It can be in different ways, maybe a 10% growth at the top line, 30% profit margin. It can be any different way you want to do it, but yeah, that's the basics.
Rob, I assume the mega caps are all over 40?
Yeah, so Amazon has shifted towards that over the last couple of years. That was probably a bit more of a top line focus. But sort of like Microsoft has been for quite a while. But yeah, you just see more and more of these companies shift towards this rule of 40, when it probably was only a handful, maybe, you know, during COVID, where revenue was so important.
And what about back home, say a company like Xero or another example?
Xero's obviously one in our portfolio, and certainly over the last 12 months they've started to introduce the idea of the rule of 40, and then explicitly spoke about it at their investor day last week, and with their aim to get to that point. They didn't really give a specific date, but to get to that point sort of in the medium term, we're thinking probably, you know, 2027 they can get to that point. So you know what they're doing, and really the way they're going to do it is like most of these other companies, is they're going to cut costs out of the business and try and reduce their operating expenses over the next few years, but try and obviously maintain that top line growth at the same time. So there's a fine balance of not taking too much cost out of the business, and at the detriment of your top line growth. So, and they're still doing it over a slower process. Yeah, we're expecting, you know, 2027. But I think, you know, as an investor, I think it's a good thing. I think one, these are better business models, better, it's more sustainable, this way of thinking, which I like. But then also, I also tend to think the market is too conservative on cost out processes and cost cuts. So typically this process has happened quicker than the market expects or what's in consensus. That leads to earnings upgrades, and which the market will like too. So I mean, you've got better business models now. I mean, you've now got higher risk that there's actually earnings upgrades to come as well over the next few years, which should, you know, put a fire under these share prices as well.
All right, Rob, let's shift now. At the macro level, we're in an inflationary environment, but as we touched on earlier, some sectors are experiencing cost disinflation. I'm interested, is there a company or even an industry that has experienced both cost disinflation and at the same time they are implementing the cost cutting that we touched on earlier?
Yeah, I think so. I think you're seeing that in some of the consumer discretionary stocks, you know, and we're seeing that cost disinflation really from, it's really the gross profit line. You're seeing all the gross margins are impacted by lower freight and lower raw material costs. So I think someone like ARB is seeing that. Obviously, it's a consumer discretionary stock. ResMed healthcare stock has benefited from low freight costs. And someone like Brambles is also profiting from declining lumber and fuel prices as well. So, and I think everyone is sort of implementing some cost cuts along the line. I think what one we like, where we think there will be cost disinflation over the next 12 months, and also they're implementing cost cuts, is Amcor. So we've seen the last result, you know, management spoke at length about the cost cutting they're implementing at the moment, which they think will cause a structural change to margins on the back of this, you know, into 24 months time. But we do think there'll be cost disinflation for them as well. Lower raw material costs should flow through to improve gross margin for them as well. So our expectation is that Amcor could be a key winner of both cost cuts, which will, you know, help the bottom line, but also this cost disinflation as well of raw materials. Obviously, they're a packaging company, so it will improve, you know, cheap plastic prices will support their gross profit. So, yeah, we expect this trend to continue for a little while longer, though likely to ease up probably by the end of this year.
Yeah, fascinating. Rob, another company that you've spoken about from time to time is Collins Foods. What is it that you like about that company? Is it similar?
Yeah, it would be. I think it's got a reasonably resilient top line. Yeah.
For those not familiar, can you give us a refresher on Collins?
KFC franchisee across Australia. You know, about 80% of the EBITDA will be from Australia, about 20% is from Europe. But Australia obviously is the key for the next 12 months. And what we've liked about it, yeah, is a resilient top line. You know, typically, these sort of fast food companies tend to have a pretty resilient customer base. And at the same time, you've seen them come under pressure probably the last couple of years from costs. You know, higher chicken prices, canola oil, potatoes, wheat, all those things have impact flowed through into, you know, higher chicken prices and chip prices. But we're starting to see that ease off now quite significantly. So we're expecting to see that cost disinflation flow through, improve. There's a margin recovery story here, pretty resilient top line in the face of a challenging macro environment. And I think, as I said, this cost disinflation or cost cutting can happen quicker than the market expects. Analysts can be a bit too conservative on it. So we think it can flow through a bit quicker than the market's expecting. And that will lead to upgrades as well.
Let's jump across to another area. Rob, while rates are expected to decrease in time, the reality is that they haven't yet, both here and over the US and other parts of the world. So apart from homeowners with a large mortgage like myself, who are high rates impacting right now?
Yeah, and we saw this in reporting season as one of the key themes for downgrades. Companies with a lot of debt are definitely getting squeezed if they haven't managed that well enough. You know, Sonic Healthcare, TPG Telecom, Lendlease, they've all experienced downgrades due to higher interest expenses from obviously their large debt balances. So it's impacting companies across various sectors. So definitely worth keeping an eye on over the next 6 months, because you don't think rates are going to come down over the next 6 months. But rates should come down by the end of this year and in flowing through into calendar year 25. So I think in some ways you could flip reverse that and say it could become a small tailwind for those companies, you know, over the sort of next 12, 18, 24 months. But right now, I think it's something to be wary of, and it caught the market off guard in February.
Let's jump across to a company that you've liked. In fact, you've liked this company for a while, and that's Goodman Group. For those not familiar, we've discussed Goodman on this podcast a few times, I think. Maybe for those not familiar with why you like it and the thesis around that, can you provide a bit of a reminder on that and in your answer, maybe if in fact you still like it?
Yeah, so Goodman Group, just to outline a summary of what they do, it's a property company and they've really specialised in logistical warehouses, and they've really been a market leader in that over the last 10, 20 years. And they've, you know, found key pieces of land around major cities globally, and they've built these logistical warehouses, which, you know, one of their key customers is Amazon, and they'll use them for their logistics and getting their e-commerce out to their customers. So that's what it's been doing over the last 20 years. It will continue doing over the next 10 to 20 years. And I think, you know, we actually increased our weighting in the portfolio last week in Goodman Group on the fact that they're now shifting towards data centers. So there was an argument possibly for logistical warehouses that, you know, the rent tailwinds you've seen for Goodman's would start to fade out maybe at the end of this decade. That's, you know, that was maybe concerning the market slightly. But now I think with data centers, you've got another 10, 20, 30 years of strong growth to come from Goodman's as they make this shift. And that they've made this shift at a very fast pace. They've really gone from, so they're, you know, their work in progress of their, you know, development pipeline, you know, it's around about 30% of their development pipeline was data centers. It's now shifted higher towards 37% in the result we saw in February. So they're quickly shifting towards data centers, and they can do that because the typology of a data center or a logistical warehouse is very similar. They're really big sheds that house, rather than, you know, e-commerce inventory, they house, you know, cloud computing, hard drives.
Why should investors be interested in this? Because, you know, it can sound boring if you're comparing, you know, big shed on the outskirt of town, but the reality is, correct me if I'm wrong, it's related to the AI thematic.
Well, that's right, yeah. So there's just so much demand, we think, for data centers to come over the next decade, that you should see the margins for Goodman Group, especially on their development assets, be quite a lot higher than the logistical warehouses. So firstly, they've got, it should drive higher revenue as they build out more data centers. Yeah, and linked to that cloud AI thematic, which will, you know, be 10, 20 years of, you know, should drive strong growth. But at the same time, there actually should be higher margin as well, just because there's this higher demand for these sheds versus the logistical warehouses. For an investor, and I don't think the market's quite got its head around it yet, that you should see, you know, extended period of revenue growth, but at the same time, you're doing that at a better margin. So you could see earnings really accelerate over the next 5 to 10 years as they shift further and further into data centers.
The margins are good, and the demand pipeline over multiple decades is looking good. Is there a moat into this industry? Why isn't other people kind of getting into it?
Yes, that's a good question. And it's really the capital intensity of it. It costs a lot to build a data center. And it sounds like, you know, I'm saying it's just a shed.
Obviously, yeah,
that's
yeah, yeah.
Not the true expertise of what a data center is in terms of, it's really a climate controlled shed, which is very hard to do. You're buying big pieces of land, you know, around major cities around the world. It isn't easy, and it's capital intensive. So unfortunately, me and you can't go out and just buy a big plot of land and build a data center and compete against Goodman's or an XDC, you know, it's an Australian data center company. So there's a big moat there as well. And yeah, there's a major tailwind in terms of cloud. But Goodman Group as well have got the balance sheet to do this. Obviously, they generate a very good return on capital at the moment. They can reinvest that back into data centers. And one snippet they gave from the result, which I thought was interesting, was they're not just going to go out and buy new plots of land for data centers. They're actually building on top of their warehouses at the moment. So Greg Goodman, CEO, founder, he gave an example of what they're doing in Hong Kong, which is basically putting another level on one of their logistical warehouses and building a data center on top of what they already own. So this could be very high return on investment. And they're not, you know, they're not going out and buying land. They're just really building on top of some brownfield sites. So again, another aspect I don't think is well understood by the market as well. So yeah, I think it's very exciting. Yeah, we increased our weight. It's run, you know, pretty hard over the last sort of few months, but I think that's now the market getting its head around how the growth profile of this business has changed dramatically.
And that's Goodman Group, a domestic company on the ASX. How are data centers valued around the world?
Yeah, I mean, they're normally on a lot higher multiples than logistical warehouses. And if you look at Equinix, which is the US listed, it's on 75 times PE. Goodman Group at the moment is around about sort of 27, 28 times its PE. So I'm not saying it gets to 27 times. That'd be pretty nice, but I don't think it would get there. But I think there is more room for it to re-rate over the next year or so. So that's why we took it to 5% and made it a pretty active position in our portfolio.
Okay, now, Rob, we've covered a lot so far, and that's been for reporting season Feb, March 2024, the one that's just been. Let's look ahead. What's the outlook looking right now for FY25? If you had a crystal ball, what will, you know, we've spoken about cost cutting, I think was the first topic or subject that we discussed today. What do you think we'll be discussing in 6 months' time?
Yeah, I wish I had a crystal ball. Yeah. That'd be very nice. Yeah, I think if we dig into the first half of 25, so the end of this calendar year, I still think we'll be in a pretty challenging macro environment. Rate cuts to come at some point in that half, but not, you know, sort of the big cuts that we saw in 2020. This is going to be a slow implementation of cuts by the RBA, I would suggest. So I think cost control will stay pretty important. I said I don't think it will be as big of a reason for upgrades as we've seen in this half, but I still think it will be important for companies to keep in touch with that and keep on control and profitability. But I do think if we look further into FY25, we start to see those rate cuts flow through, an improvement in consumer sentiment. You know, I do think cyclical stocks will be, you know, the stocks to be in. And the market will anticipate this 12 months in advance. It already sort of has in some ways. And yeah, so that, you know, we've seen some of those cyclical stocks rally over the last few months. But I think that can continue as we see improvement in economy globally and domestically as well. So, you know, our focus at the moment is always on quality companies with strong fundamentals that can navigate what is still an uncertain environment over the next 6 months. But we're slowly now shifting towards the more cyclical side of the market, trying to stick to quality, but moving to that cyclical side of the market. I actually also think as well, there will be cyclicals, but I also think growth will also do quite well. You start to see bond yields come down. That could be, you know, that's a tailwind for growth stocks valuations. So I think you sort of want to have a mix of, you know, high quality cyclicals and some good growth stocks at the same time. And that could be a good formula.
It's been a fascinating discussion. We've covered a lot. Rob, we might wrap it up there. Thanks very much for taking the time to chat with us today.
That's been great. Thanks, Ted.
Now, if you are interested in what was discussed, in particular, Rob's recent reporting season wrap-up, please click on the link in the episode show notes to read that. And there'll also be a link in there if you are not yet a Wilson's Advisory client and would like to request a phone call from one of our private wealth advisors here. Finally, if you enjoyed this episode too, please share it with a friend. Thank you for listening to the Invest It Best podcast.
This podcast has been prepared by Wilson's Advisory and Stockbroking Limited. Wilson's has not independently verified any of the information given in this podcast, and no representation or warranty, express or implied, is made as to the accuracy or completeness of the information and opinions contained therein. All effort is made to ensure information was accurate at the time of recording. No reliance should be placed on this podcast in making any investment decision, and past performance is no indication of future performance. The directors of Wilson's advise that they and persons associated with them and Wilson's may have an interest in financial products referred to in this podcast.